Yes.
This is an oral history interview with Fred Bosolo on 27th of September 2002. The interviewers are Arnold Thackeray and Arthur Demarish, and the focus is the Gordon Research Conferences. But Fred, we should probably actually begin with you coming to Northwestern, as you were just saying, getting into. Were you aware of, as a graduate student, were you aware there was such a thing as a Gordon Research Conference before you ever came here?
No, I wasn't even aware that Northwestern existed before I came here. So, yes, if you need to know how it happened, I came here. I mentioned last night that I did my first job was to do this classified research during World War II. And as soon as the war was over, or practically over, and people like myself on these classes doing the classified work, most of us were free to go ahead. And I had always wanted to teach, because as an undergraduate, I went to a teacher's college where you can only get a bachelor. Well, you read my autobiography, Bachelor of Education, and I also wanted to stay in the state of Illinois, because that's where I grew up, Nevergate. And Northwestern, not all universities really were looking for faculty, because the GIs were coming back, and the government was paying for the GIs. And when I got here, it was 46, and there really wasn't an inorganic chemist. There were a couple of graduate students doing something that probably you could call inorganic chemistry, but the kind of inorganic chemistry that that we did, and the kind that Henry Taube did and got the Nobel Prize and so forth, wasn't. There wasn't anybody doing anything like this. And now when I write things, and since you guys would be experts, tell me, everybody talks about the renaissance of inorganic chemistry. They say Bosolo is one of the guys involved with the renaissance of inorganic chemistry. But doesn't the renaissance mean that you're coming back to something that had already been done? So I'm inclined to call it the birth of inorganic chemistry. And I point out that the gestation period in the U.S. was a hell of a long one. And so I've been referring to it as the birth of inorganic chemistry. And to know inorganic chemistry now, no one would believe that it is where it is, compared to where it was in the 40s and so forth. I mean, it's made such jumps that it ranks now very close, almost the same as organic chemistry, whereas organic chemistry dominated chemistry. Mm-hmm. And that's the situation in terms of my early chemistry.
So you come to Northwestern, you're an inorganic chemist, there isn't much here, so who do you talk to, A, at Northwestern, and B, out there?
Well,
in the immediate post-war period.
Yeah. Here, when I came, Northwestern had positions for about 70 faculty. I'm not saying I don't mean 70, I mean six or seven faculty. And I think that there were six of us who arrived at about the same time. And we used to get together in an office about this size and have lunch together. Eventually that developed into a lunch that we now have together in this large conference room. But in any case, we would talk about things, and even occasionally about chemistry. I mean, we'd talk about the football games and the baseball games and so forth, but we would also occasionally talk about chemistry. And when chemistry was talked about at that point, inorganic chemistry really was not considered to be all that significant. And so Ralph Pearson, whose training was in kinetics and mechanisms of reactions, he was working on organic compounds with some of our organic chemists and helping them do this kind of chemistry. And I used to give Ralph the business, how about coming on board, two of us, because systems that I could, that I know we should be studying, no one else is looking at. We could do what you're doing on organic compounds on the metal complexes, which are a class of compounds, and almost anything we would do would be original, publishable, useful as far as students are concerned, till you get their PhD thesis approved, because that also would be readily original kind of work. And that's what happened. I mean, it just kind of happened that Pearson then did come on board, and the two of us together really did what we couldn't have done individually. I mean, he needed me, I needed him, and we arrived here just at the right time. And that's really how that part happened.
How do you get from that to being at this first Gordon conference?
I have a whole pile of things that I haven't thrown away. I'm about to give the archives some things and throw things away. I think I put that right on there, right at the top, right there. Is there? Let me see what that is. Does that look like it?
GLC.
Yeah, that's the Gordon conference. But I like this though when I saw it. Now let me see the other one on top of the other one. Does that look like it's been
on Burmeister?
Xerox. Oh my God! That's, well, can't believe it. You're looking for two sheets, which are obviously things that were Xeroxed, and I thought I'd put them right out on top of everything. Now let me see if I can work my way over there. Let me. No. Oh, damn it. Well, I'm sure you're going to get these things, but I really wanted to show you that. I'm sure it's something you people would want to see, anyway. Well, not inside this.
Okay. Look at that.
Is it,
damn it. I'll tell you what's on it, but I should have it sitting there.
It's not this, is it? It's not that.
Absolutely, it is that. Good for you. There's another paper. Well, yeah, it seems people get it. Okay, if you look at this, you'll see inorganic chemistry, because the Grödner conference started long before inorganic chemistry, but it's talking about it. Inorganic chemistry wasn't all that important. And in order to start a Grödner conference, I think they had a rule that you had to have in excess of 50 people for it to pay for itself. And it would not have been possible to get 50 inorganic chemists to go to the Grödner conference, because there was no funding. They would have to pay their travel, their registration expenses themselves. So inorganic chemistry, as you will see here, and I'm sure they're going to give you what you want from the Grödner conference archives or whatever. Anyway, inorganic chemistry seems as though, and this is the way I remember, started in 51, and it tells you exactly what happened here. Started with the discussion, not any lecture, but just discussion of some areas of inorganic chemistry. Then this moved to lectures given, and the first lecture given is me, if that is believed. That's what it says here. And I can't remember that it was the first, but I think that this is correct. That was the first inorganic lecture given. There were these discussions before my lecture, however, but the discussions had nothing to do with my lecture. And after my lecture, then there were additional lectures. And the inorganic conference was every year, and each year inorganic chemistry began to be somewhat more important, so that there would be people who wanted to attend, and the number went from 50-ish up to 100 fairly readily, and it kept at that and even got a bit larger. And I think at one point it was intended that you would have no more than 150, and not too many less than 150, because the schools that they were in needed that amount of money to carry on these Grödner conferences. And the conference is still going from 51 till now, and it only missed 1 year. And I don't know that I should tell you this, or I don't know that you should use it, but there was the chairman, and we didn't know this, of course, the chairman was having trouble working up a program, getting speakers and so forth, and I don't know that it was Alex yet. It was before Alex. Well, it might be. Yeah, maybe it was Alex. Anyway, yeah, it was Alex. In any case, Alex would call him and ask for the program, he would say, I've got one or two more people to contact, and Alex would say, look, we always publish these in Science, I think it is, mm-hmm. and I really need this information, because Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to publish. Well, it went this way, and the end result was he had become an alcoholic. And that particular Gordon conference, since it was so late before they found out.
So it was actually a gap.
There's one year. I can't remember what year it is.
Can I go back to this first conference,
yes,
Brad? And the idea of having a Gordon conference on inorganic chemistry, do you know whose idea that was? Was that John Baylor?
Oh yes, I think John Baylor had much to do with it, but there were others as well. Baylor and Moeller at Illinois, and I don't know if you let me see that. It will remind me. But yes, people like Bob Perry and myself, we were there also at that time. But Baylor. Oh yeah, well. People also that were involved right early on is Martel, who is almost dead, but not quite. Anton Berg, he was an old timer and doing good work, and Shum at MIT, and J.D. Washington. These people were a bit older than Bob Perry and myself, and they were much more involved. We were, of course, being helpful, and got involved ourselves as a result of their asking us to, I guess, or wanting to. So Perry and I have been very loyal. In fact, that's the reason I put that picture, you know, frame there that is supposed to indicate that I've been going through all these 50 years or so. And Perry and I haven't missed very many of the inorganic working conferences. Well, I certainly missed a couple because I was dying with pneumonia for 4 months. I was not able to do this. And I guess one other time I had a commitment abroad, and it was not going to be convenient to make that commitment and go to the Gordon conference. So I've only missed the two or three, I guess. And even now, where I just can't really do this, and I don't do any other traveling, I enjoy going to the Gordon Conference and have made arrangements. Carl Storm, who's the director at the moment, and his group make sure that I have my generator, an oxygen generator. They make sure that I have a scooter, both of which I need, of course. And they know that I no longer have funding because I haven't been doing any research. I haven't had a lab for the last 15 years or so. And so he picks up the tab for all this registration and everything else, and he calls me a consultant, I guess. So I'm a consultant, and he's been very kind about it. And the reason I like to go to these is, first of all, I was editing a small journal, Comments on Inorganic Chemistry, and this journal was not all that prestigious a journal, but it was certainly adequate and certainly a respectable journal, and it was very helpful to young people who were making up their resume in terms of particularly putting it as part of what they accomplished in doing and so forth, in their attempt to get tenure, so that they would do this, and I would tell them, for example, look, when you write your article for comments on inorganic chemistry, you have to write a proposal of work that you want to do, and you can certainly edit it and modify it somewhat and send it to comments on inorganic chemistry. They were all very thankful, not all, I guess, but most of them were very thankful, and the journal did very well. Well, I finally got tired of this, and a year or so ago, I recommended to the publishers that they contact John Fackler. He does this kind of thing, and Fackler was very pleased to take it on, and that means that I'm no longer doing it. I got more than enough to do, and I have some difficulties in keeping up with it. But what I'm doing now, just to show you guys, is this, something like this. There's Missouri Department in this, it's a Nobel Prize laureate, and a couple of others, Nobel Prize laureates. And what it is you take your reprints of articles that you published, and they will fix them up, make the book, and they got several volumes in this series of volumes, and most of them are Nobel Prize laureates contributed.
Now, if we jump back again to this 1951 conference, Fernelius is listed as head of it. Who was he? Tell us a little about him.
Okay. Fernelius, he did research, but it really never attracted all that much attention. And that's okay. He was still contributing. And he certainly was, along with Baylor and these people, interested in starting the Gordon Conference. So, yes, he should be mentioned in history.
Where was he? What was his?
Oh, he was at Penn State.
Okay. Yeah. And was it thought right away that this would become an annual conference, or was it, let's hold one and see what happens?
No, I believe that all of us who really were involved in getting it going, as I say, inorganic chemistry was just starting, so there were not that many people doing inorganic chemistry. Also, the people didn't have all that much funding, so they couldn't really get funding for travel, for registration, and so forth. So it started slowly, but I think we all thought that it would continue, because the Gordon conferences, the other ones, were continuing, and we knew that they were all pleased. The format is still the same as you've heard about, I'm sure, where they have the talks in the morning, take the afternoon off, go play golf in my case, and others play tennis, and others climb around the mountains and so forth, whatever, and then have an evening session. And that's a very nice format. The other thing that's very nice about it is that it is limited to 150. I don't know if you guys have ever gone to the American Chemical Society annual meetings. There are millions of people running around. You can't find anybody even if you want to. Here, limiting it to 150. And arrangements are that, in fact, in some of these school, boys' school, now that I'm handicapped, of course, I don't do that, but you share a room and one, you eat in the cafeteria all together, and if you want to see someone, it's very easy to make arrangements to see them some afternoon. If you want to talk to them about your research, or you can write a paper to them together sometimes. You can do that. So that it is kind of unique in that respect. And those of us who go to conferences where there are thousands of people like this arrangement. Also invited are some of the very best chemists, inorganic chemists, doing really outstanding work. And maybe the other people want to attend. This big shot that chemist who's doing all this very good work, and so they have a few of these people sprinkled in. Now they also have had for several years posters, and so graduate students and others put up their posters. So it's been going all these years, and it's still going. In fact, now it's gotten so large, I think, that I heard a couple of years ago, a fella who was chairing it got 180 requests, and he had a hell of a time cutting it down to 150. So at the moment, no problem. In inorganic chemistry, yeah. I don't know anything about the others. No.
Had you, when you went to that first conference, had you ever been into anything like it? Did it remind you of anything? I mean, what did you think of this?
It didn't really remind me of anything, because in those days, that was in 51, and I started the started publishing, I don't remember what our first paper was, but in the late 40s and early 50s. So I got involved because of Baylor and people like this, and the fact that there were so few inorganic chemists. So, and those of us who were younger, got involved also once we came on board, writing letters to a few inorganic chemists that we knew that were doing inorganic chemistry, and pointing out to them how much we really needed to support for the conference, how important it was going to be, and so forth. We didn't know it was going to be ending up the way it has. We didn't know that inorganic chemistry was going to be where it is today, you know. I mean, all the stuff that Mark Radner told you about was inorganic chemistry. So much of all we have, seriously, we do have some of the very, very top people, and the research they're doing is on inorganic systems. I mean, they're doing physical inorganic chemistry, most of them. And thinking that it was zero when I arrived in 46, and having a look now, it just is frightening to realize what's been going on. Fortunately, the president, the provost, these guys, are very supportive of the chemistry department. They know that the chemistry department really pays for itself practically, because the guys go out and get these grants, and I don't know what percentage the university takes of those, but it's surely 15% or so of the amount that they get, and also every once in a while they are able to get some like a government agency that actually put a lot more money in it, buildings like the one you went through this morning happened in that way, really.
One of the interesting things about this 1951 conference is from the start you have industry representation. What was the interest of industry in organic chemistry at the time?
Yeah, that's a good question. And there wasn't all that much, but the so-called rare earths were being used in different ways, I guess, in incandescent lighting, this, that, and the other. And there was a laboratory, commercial laboratory, that was actually separating these rare earths, difficult to separate, in order to get the ones that would be active and do the job.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't all that much going on.
The first day, Fred, is devoted to Crystal Grove.
Yeah, that's.
And there's a Bell Labs guy. Is that already germanium silicon? Is that what that was about?
Yeah, but I don't remember too much about the commercial stuff that was going on, but that certainly is true. Growing these crystals, and again, when they grew the crystals, they had a special need for them. And so you can see that there are three or four or five people there who are in industry, the rest of us are in universities.
Did you know Beams, that whole first day, it was Crystal Grove, did you know Beams about that?
Not really.